Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
We're one day away till the college football playoff semifinals get kicked off. We're answering big questions. Best quarterback left, best coach left. Welcome to the show. Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. We get back to the NFL coaching cycle in just a moment. That's not going anywhere. We got some time to help these sorry franchises try to figure out their head coach situations. But let's go to the games that are really mattering right now, Pearl. And that's, of course, the Orange Bowl, which kicks off tomorrow. Amazing. Penn State, Notre Dame, 1.5-point spread. And then Friday, the Cotton Bowl, Texas and Ohio State. Ohio State, a 5.5-point favorite. But if I asked you to rank the four quarterbacks left in this matchup. So, of course, Texas, Quinn Ewers, Ohio State, Will Howard, Penn State, Drew Aller, and Notre Dame, Riley Leonard. Who's your 1-4?
This is the hardest assignment I've ever had on the Maggie and Perloff show because all of them have really positive attributes and really negative attributes. So, okay, let's... I'm going to do this in an interesting way. I'm going to start with each matchup. Who do I think gives a better chance of winning Notre Dame, Penn State? I think Riley Leonard. So I'm going to put him above Aller. And who do I think gives a better chance of winning at Ohio State, Texas? I think Will Howard over Ewers. So that means that I got to go. Now I'm going to choose between Howard and Leonard. I will go Will Howard, but I think it's closer than you think. Because I think Riley Leonard will do whatever is needed for Notre Dame to win. Mm. When he flipped over that guy in the Georgia game, like Georgia's defense is no joke. And he had such a gutsy performance. So really what I'm giving him such a close call, number two, is the intangible thing. I know that's kind of weak, but I just think he's going to do whatever Notre Dame needs to do to win. He's an older guy. So I'm going to put Will Howard. But again, Will Howard is just a thin number one. He's probably like seeing the field the best right now, but he was terrible against Michigan. 19 for 33, 175 yards, 2 picks. So if you pressure him, then Howard will become a pumpkin, but he is throwing the ball really well. So I go Howard, Leonard. Then I'm going to actually go Ewers, piece of experience a little bit over Aller, but I have all four really close. Now, Aller is really handcuffed because I don't think that offense is any good. Like, he doesn't really have anyone to throw to. He's probably the best pro prospect here. But as far as these guys coming to these four games, I have him fourth.
I don't think it's really that much of a question in that Will Howard is clearly playing the best of all four of these quarterbacks right now. Yeah, you want to go back to the Michigan game.
That was
two games ago. But look at who they've beaten over the two games, and that's where I'm going to give the nod to Will Howard. Well, they destroyed Tennessee. Tennessee, SEC, coming to the horseshoe off of that big loss, and he was phenomenal in that. Yeah. Everyone was phenomenal in that game. Ohio State was a wagon. And then the second game, to beat Oregon in the way that they did and for the offense to explode against the number one team in the country and the number one team in this tournament, I think it's without a doubt that Will Howard is playing the best. Now, if you had asked me a month ago, maybe my answer is not the same. But right now, it's absolutely the same.
Yeah, but I mean, do you think Manny or EJ could throw for 300 yards on that? What is the skill to throw to Jeremiah Smith? Like, just get it anywhere near that dude, and he's going to box out everybody and catch the ball. So you have to account that in this debate. That is definitely part of it.
It's not 7-on-7. Oregon had a defense out there. Tennessee had one of the best defenses in the country.
This is arguably, Ohio State, once again, one of the great receiving corps in college football history. So I think, like, yes, you're crediting Will Howard, but was it really Will Howard or was it the receiving corps?
If you're giving me these four quarterbacks and you're asking me who do I want right now to go try to win this whole thing, it's Will Howard, and I think he's number one, and then we've got a little bit of a gap. And secondly, I would go to Drew Aller next, actually. I would go to Aller a second on this list. And listen, it's tough because besides Ty Warren, he doesn't really have a lot of weapons here, but he is helped out by the run game. And I think if you are picking Penn State in this game, you and I have not made our picks for this game yet, but I'm leaning Penn State, and it's because of Drew Aller, at least the ability to push the ball down the field. I don't know if Riley Leonard can really push the ball down the field.
Wait,
at
this
least
Penn State team?
Yes. And number three to me would be Riley Leonard. A little of what you said, the do-it-all factor. Obviously, a guy throws for 90 yards against Georgia. That's not impressive at all. But the box score didn't tell the story there. Everything he was doing to keep drives alive with his legs, all of that. And I'm putting Quinn Ewers as a fourth, which I think is kind of surprising considering he's the guy who had like the five stars next to his name at some point. But to me, Ewers, it was an all-time 4th-and-13 play that will live on forever in Texas lore. But think about that. I mean, it took a miracle for them to beat Arizona State. Double overtime. I'm putting Quinn Ewers. He's the quarterback I trust the least right now.
Yeah, but then again, like, it's such a confusing thing because he's arguably the best quarterback of that group. He just feels a little bit hurt right now. And the fact that he's not really moving much puts them at a disadvantage. I mean, I think they got complacent in that Arizona State game. They should have put that away early. Something happened. Wasn't the finest day for my guy, Steve Sarkisian. But then again, if I told you Quinn Ewers would go out there and play better than Will Howard with Sark coaching him, I don't think that'd be a huge shock. I mean, the thing is, Ohio State has other ways to beat you.
Yeah.
Like, Texas needs Ewers to go off.
I'm not so sure. We've been waiting for Arch. Arch hasn't really been a thing yet in this playoff. I can't imagine they would wait long. I mean, what we saw in the first Georgia game was kind of not fair to Arch Manning, I thought. You know, Georgia just jumped out on Texas, and they went to Arch in a panic move and then went back to Ewers. I think if they go to Arch this time, they're sticking with Arch, and that's it. And I wouldn't be surprised if they get down. If it's two touchdowns, they're going to Arch.
Yeah, I mean, Arch came in. Didn't he come in that Georgia loss early in the year? And
that's
didn't
what
do
I
anything?
Said.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
That was a bad spot to put him in. And then they went back to Ewers after halftime.
Yeah. The fight. So you think at a four, I really disagree with one point you had. I think in a close game, if it gets down to it, and you have Drew Aller in that offense against Riley Leonard in that offense, I feel like the experienced guy, Riley Leonard, who's a lot older than Aller, I would give him the edge. And just in the college game, yes, Aller is a fantastic prospect. But I feel like the way that they're playing right now, he only threw for 80 yards, and Notre Dame was perfectly happy with that. Like, they were run. And even when he did drop back, I was screaming at Georgia. I'm like, he's not going to throw it. He's going to run for 8 yards. Stop it, Georgia. Just get up. Bring everyone to the box. They're not going to throw the ball. I thought that was actually a really brilliant game by him. He's a very good college quarterback. I don't know. You know, I heard second or third round for Riley Leonard based on the fact that he did throw a lot at Duke, or at least somewhat. We'll see. They're all right in the same boat. Will Howard, to me, is a mystery because you saw when the pressure got on against Michigan, man, he panicked a couple of times. He definitely did. I don't think Texas can get to him like that, but I am not that confident in him. It's not like we have, it's not like we have Trevor Lawrence in this four group. It's not like
we have
Tua. It's not like we have an obvious superstar quarterback.
I don't know. I'm looking at Will Howard, and it's not just about the numbers, but I mean,
you were
completing 83% of his passes against Tennessee. They won 42-17. I mean, and even against Oregon, the number one team in the country, he's 17-26. It's about 65% of his passes, 319 yards, 3 touchdowns, no picks.
How hard is it to be the Ohio State quarterback? I mean, honestly, I can't wait till next year when whoever comes in there is good. What if they get an even bigger arm than Will Howard?
So beyond quarterback, which is just one part of the equation here, we were talking about the college football playoff. We also have four head coaches who have a lot on the line. I would say a lot to gain. I don't know how much. How do I want to say this here? Aside from James Franklin, I think he's the only one actually with something to lose of these four coaches. I think Ryan Day has taken himself off any, if there even was a hot seat, I think that he has taken himself off of it with the way that Ohio State has turned things around over the last two games. Mm-hmm. I think that I think Texas is just so happy to be back still. The fact they were in the playoff last year, they're now in the Final Four this year. I don't think Sark is in danger of losing the fan base. You lose to Ohio State where you're a 5.5-point underdog. I don't think he's in any kind of danger. Say Marcus Freeman. I think Notre Dame's so thrilled that this is where they are and that Freeman's here. I don't think that it's a negative. He beat Kirby Smart. He coached the doors off of Kirby Smart. I think they're happy. James Franklin's the only one to me who actually has something to lose, because I think that can he win a big game question mark is still out there. And the perception is that Penn State got the easiest path here. You know, playing SMU at home in cold weather and then getting to play Boise State, which is a great story, but he hasn't like actually proven that he can win a big game yet.
Yeah, but I think he's perfectly safe. I mean, obviously Penn State, I still think Penn State probably feels somewhat lucky to get him. I mean, nobody else, it's going to be hard. Like, they've had a string of big, big recruits under Franklin. I don't think they would pass on that. I mean, who are you going to bring in that's better, that's going to get like a Drew Aller there?
I'm just saying he's the only one who I think would get criticized for losing in this round.
Yeah,
I don't think the other guys get criticized.
The spread is so close. I don't think they get killed. I don't think he gets killed for losing this game.
Well, if they come out and they lose 35-10, I think he's going to get killed in this game. That's my opinion. But we're ranking these coaches.
So if you went
1-4.
How is Notre Dame going to beat them 35-10?
I don't know if Notre Dame's beating anybody 35-10.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like this game
Navy.
It's going to be like 16-13. Okay. You're not going to like my ranking. I'm going Sark 1 because I feel like he is secretly the best coach out of this group. Marcus Freeman 2 because he's on fire. Ryan Day 3 because he killed me in a bet on Michigan. I will never forgive him. And James Franklin 4 for obvious reasons. He definitely has not won the big game. They always feel tight in the big games. And yeah, I'm not convinced by him either.
You know, I put Marcus Freeman number 1 here. I was so impressed with what they did against Georgia, and I know that this Georgia team wasn't like the years past. I get they were on a backup quarterback. I totally understand all of that stuff. I'm there. I'm here week to week. But Kirby Smart is the man in college football now, right?
Mm.
He's the guy. Saban's gone. Jim Harbaugh is gone. He's the guy.
Well, yeah, because he has great players. He's not like an X's and O's super genius or anything.
There's a lot of great players out there, and there's a lot of Saban assistants who couldn't beat Saban until Kirby Smart came along.
There's no depth chart in the history of the sport like the 2021 and 22 Georgia defense.
No, there were Alabama teams that were just like that.
But go ahead.
I will put Freeman number 1 here. I'm actually going to go with Ryan Day number 2. I think he gets so much criticism, and then look what happens. Beat the brakes off of Tennessee, beat the brakes off of Oregon, and it's like, well, we still got to see if they're going to revert back to old Ohio State. Guys, they're not. They're not. They figured this out. That was a horrible, horrible loss against Michigan. It's been multiple horrible losses against Michigan, but I don't think Ryan Day is a bad coach. Sark would be 3, and then James Franklin is 4 for me. See, you and I both have James Franklin 4. He's the guy. He's the only one of this group who will get criticized if they lose. I believe that.
No.
I don't know. If Ryan Day loses, that'd be bad because they're the biggest favorites. I mean, he might keep his job, but I think he will be much maligned. Because I think everybody's pick of this game is an Ohio State blowout. If Day somehow with that much talent, I mean, right now because Texas is a little banged up, like the talent differential feels pretty big to me. Josh Pate said that on paper, Texas is as good as anyone. I don't know. I feel like Ohio State, we've been waiting for this team as the defensive players get older. Like, we've been waiting for JTT and Sawyer to be elite. Like, they have all the defensive players, and they have, like, this dream team on offense. They really should win this game. You don't think Day will get killed if he loses this game? I think it would be bad.
Yeah, I think
especially if they play conservatively on offense.
I think he's turned things around. See, I don't think they're going to play conservatively. Like, I think that's... I don't think all of a sudden you're going to see that Michigan game plan.
The only way that happens, the only way this is a game, if Texas D-line just tortures Ohio State's offensive line, going to be tough. I mean, actually, you know, they played really well against Arizona State overall. They were murdering that quarterback for most of the game. If they can do that to Ohio State's linemen, then, of course, Will Howard's going to come back to earth because any quarterback under pressure is not great. That's an interesting challenge. Now I hope it's a close game just to see how Day and Sark match up against each other.
855-212-4227. All right, a look at the college football playoff from the quarterback and the coach's perspective. It's Wednesday, which means the great debate. We are asking you today, what is the greatest NFL wild card game of all time? EJ, I'm just going to go out on a limb and assume that my choice is winning the poll so far, which is shorthand. It's just called the comeback, 1993 Bills over the Houston Oilers. Am I right about that?
You are right about that. So the poll is up, and right now we're looking at 50% say Bills Oilers 93 is the greatest wild card game, followed by the Catch 2 at 22%. The Music City Miracle is at 20%, and Perloff's Cards versus Packers Shootout in 09 is at 7%.
There are no flags on the field!
Can you read the other poll results?
We can't do a highlight from any other game.
By the way, yes, other poll results. So we also did just throw up who's the, it's early, but who's the best QB left in the college football playoff? Right now, Drew Aller leading the way at 33%.
No, do the ones that Maggie and I were debating.
Oh, so let's go earlier. There is no Purdy poll, I don't think, but there is a Tom Brady poll. Will Tom Brady help the Raiders get back to winning football? 21% say yes, 78% say no.
Well, let's do yesterday's poll, too. If you had to start a team, which QB would you rather have, Trevor Lawrence or Brock Purdy?
So that one is now closed, so no more added votes here. Trevor Lawrence, 64%, Brock Purdy, 36%.
How about this one? Would hiring Mike McCarthy be a good idea for the Bears? You get the point.
I'm like, how fast you want me to scroll here, Pearl?
60% say no. Maggie, you're going against the grain a lot.
Listen, it's not my fault that I see things clear. I got the chessboard in front of me.
I think you need glasses.
Everything.
I think you need glasses because Trevor Lawrence is 6'4 and Brock Purdy's 5'10.
Okay. Who's won more playoff games? Here's the thing. This is the Brock Purdy. The Brock Purdy Trevor Lawrence debate from yesterday was a lot about salary and how much Brock Purdy, how much money should he get, and should he get Trevor Lawrence money and blah, blah, blah. The Brock Purdy debate for today is Brock Purdy as the solution for the Las Vegas Raiders.
It's not a different debate. It's the same debate.
it's slightly.
It's how good you think Brock Purdy is.
Exactly.
Well, and I think we should ask an expert about this.
Yeah, well, we can. And an expert and someone who knows the Raiders organization better than anybody. And that is their former CEO and current CBS Sports football analyst. That'd be Amy Trask. The one and only. She's going to join us next. She knows the Raiders. She knows everything they're about. We'll get her thoughts on their head coaching search moving forward and my idea that they should trade for Brock Purdy. 855-212-4227.
Welcome back, Maggie and Perloff. Oh, Maggie, is there any better feeling than having our upcoming guest come on the show?
No, not at all, because we need not only her positive attitude, but we need her expertise here because you can't fix the Raiders. I'm trying to. She knows the Raiders organization better than any of us, and that's Amy Trask. She's the former CEO of the Raiders, of course. Now you can listen and watch her on What the Football with Susie Schuster, which is a fantastic podcast, of course, on Tops on CBS Sports Network. She wrote a best-selling book called You Negotiate Like a Girl. It's on my bookshelf. Amy Trask, thank you so much for getting up early for us today. Hey, Amy.
Well, thank you very, very much for having me. It's always a pleasure to join you. I would get up at any hour for you. I was already up. And by the way, I've had a lot of caffeine this morning, and my husband often says when I have too much, I'm a little bit like a hummingbird on speed, so get ready.
Fantastic. This is what we want to hear, because we need answers from you, Amy. At least we need to try to get answers, because I'm sure your phone blows up anytime something like this happens with the Raiders, because you were with them for so long. They say goodbye to Antonio Pierce. Tom Telesco is going to stay as the general manager, but here we go again, looking for another head coach. My first question to you is actually about the Tom Brady of it all. You know that organization well. Tom Brady has said that he's going to have some influence here on the coaching decision. How much influence do you think Tom's going to have?
I think he'll have a significant amount. How we define significant depends on, you know, how we view that term. But do I believe he will have input? Yes, I do. Do I believe his input will be valued? Yes, I do. But there's another name we're not hearing bandied about as we hear Tom's name bandied about, and that is Richard Seymour. And the reason I mention that is, just as Tom has purchased an equity interest in the team, so too has Richard. You know, I had the tremendous pleasure of working with Richard when we were both with the organization at the same time, and I know him to be wise and intelligent and just thoughtful, and I use thoughtful in every sense of the word. I think they should take input from Richard as well as from Tom.
But structure-wise, it seems like there are a lot of voices in owner Mark Davis's ear. And you obviously worked with Al Davis, who felt like, he was more of a one-voice guy. Like, can this work for a team, Amy, where just the owner has to take so much input? Like, how do smart owners deal with this? Like, how do they know who to listen to and who not to listen to?
Well, can it work? Absolutely, it can work. Will it work? We don't know yet whether it will work. Look, I'm a big believer that when making a decision, one should elicit and factor in input from anyone that one believes can contribute in a helpful manner. At the end of the day, though, you're right. Mark is the controlling owner of the team, and he can take all the input he wishes, but ultimately, we'll have to make the decision. And here's the thing. When you are the controlling owner of a business, any business, not just a team, you can delegate authority, but you have ultimate authority. And even if you delegate that authority, you can always yank back that delegation. Ultimate authority and ultimate responsibility rests with the controlling owner. So go ahead and take all the valuable input you wish, but make the decision you believe is right.
Amy Trask is joining us, the former CEO of the Raiders. What the Football with her and Susie Schuster is a must listen. Also Tops on CBS Sports Network. You know, Amy, the idea about, do you need somebody who has some coaching experience versus taking a chance on a coordinator who has never been in the top seat before? How you've been in these rooms, how do you make that determination on the coordinators who have no head coaching experience? Like Ben Johnson is the hot name now. What would you want to hear from someone who's never sat in that seat? What do you want to hear that would convince you that they're the right person?
I would have to be convinced that they have leadership skills. Skills beyond X's and O's. Now, look, X's and O's are of crucial importance. But you want a coach who can lead an organization, lead a team. At the end of the day, you can have a coach in place who isn't the best offensive coordinator or defensive coordinator, as long as you then surround those people with the best. I would rather have the best leader imaginable. And if I don't think that person is as skilled as should be when it comes to the X's and O's, I'm getting the best coordinators imaginable.
Amy, do you think that Antonio Pierce got a fair shake here? Was there any good argument to maybe give him more time to try to develop this team?
Yeah, I do think there's an argument for that. I don't know whether that was factored into the decision or not. The team played hard for Antonio. We saw when he took over partway through last season, he brought back, for lack of a better word, I'll say oomph. He brought back, I'll go with strength and passion and oomph that we hadn't seen for a while. And that continued this season. Even when the team was out of a game, we saw players playing hard. Even when the losses mounted, we saw players playing hard. They obviously have to solve the question at quarterback. Would Antonio have been different in that role with a different quarterback? I imagine he would have. But there were, as I understand it, some issues going on within the organization that suggested that they wanted to make a change now. Could he have improved over time? Sure, he could have. They obviously didn't show that patience and decided to move on now.
I mean, tough assignment. You go into a season with Gardner Minshew, Aiden O'Connell, and Desmond Ridder in the AFC West, and you're asking to go up against, some really good quarterbacks and coaches. Good luck to you with no legitimate quarterback, no franchise quarterback, I should say. Amy Trask is joining us, breaking down the Raiders here in a little bit more. You know, Amy, I'm curious if you have any knowledge about a relationship maybe between Deion Sanders and by extension Shador Sanders with Mark Davis, because we know with Tom Brady, he's one of Shador's mentors, right? We know there's a relationship there. Obviously, the Raiders are picking sixth. Maybe to get a Shador Sanders, you might, have to make a really big trade. But do you know if Mark Davis and the Sanders family have any connection?
Well, I'm going to answer that, of course, but I do want to touch on one thing you just pointed out, which is a tremendous point, Maggie. You always make tremendous points. The AFC West, I mean, look at the three coaches in the AFC West that you're playing against. And look at the quarterbacks in the AFC West. Great point you made as to the division and the competitiveness within the division. Look, let's talk about connectivity. Tom Brady is connected to Mark Davis and to the Raiders through Jim Gray. That's how Tom and Mark came to have a relationship. That's how Tom came to purchase an equity interest in the team through Jim Gray. And the reason I point that out is connectivity is important. Those connections matter. And as you noted, there is a connection between Tom and Shador and Dion. So irrespective of whether there's a direct connection between Shador and Mark and Dion and Mark, and they are connected, of course there is connectivity. You've really got sort of multi-step connectivity. You've got Tom connected to Mark through Jim Gray. You've got Dion and Shador connected to Tom, connected to Mark. So there are a lot of interesting connections there, and I would not be at all surprised to see if there's some movement there to see what can be done, whether with respect to Shador or another quarterback. This draft, as you know, is not as deep on quarterbacks as last year's was.
Amy, I look at the Raiders roster, though, and for Shador or any quarterback, like, it feels a little offensively thin right now. I know you have a great tight end in Brock Bowers, but Shador comes there. Is the line and the wide receiving core good enough to really help him get, like, a great start in the NFL?
You know, just one moment on Brock before we move on. Imagine the numbers Brock Bowers could have put up this year over and above that which he did with a different quarterback. I mean, those numbers would have just blown the lid off everything, and he already did pass innumerable records. There is a need for more on offense. Josh Jacobs left. He's now having a terrific year. I'm a big fan of the running game. The better the running game, the better the passing game, because if the opposing defense needs to stop a tremendous runner, that's less defenders you can put on wide receivers, tight ends, and less you can focus on getting to the quarterback. So, you know, I think they would be wise to look at the offensive line, as you noted, wide receivers, as you noted, but I would also emphasize the running game.
Amy Trask joining us. She's the former CEO of the Raiders. She's the person we go to with all Raiders questions, of course, also on Tops on CBS Sports Network and What the Football with Susie Schuster, which is fantastic. Saw you guys had Stephen A. Smith on. That's very fun on the most recent pod. So, Amy, you said that I have great ideas and I make great points. Well, my co-host might disagree with you on that. And the internet, for that matter.
Excuse me. Then he's wrong. I mean, let's just say right now.
Keep an open mind, Amy, on this one particular idea.
Amy, you might not want to back me up on this one. And it's totally fair if you don't want to. It's okay, because I've got an outside-the-box idea for the Raiders. And I'm curious if you think there's any merit to it. And my outside-the-box thought is, if you can't get a quarterback this year, you still need a quarterback, right? This is the one thing the Raiders need. What about calling up the 49ers? And if they don't want to pay Brock Purdy at the top of the market, if I'm the Raiders, I'm welcoming him with open arms. What do you think about the idea of calling the 49ers to trade for Brock Purdy? Do you still think I have good ideas?
Well, before I get to your idea, I assume you understand the irony of you asking me this question after the absolute pillaging I took last year for sharing some thoughts on Brock Purdy. But the fact is, he is a far, far, far better quarterback than anyone on their current roster. So, you know, my answer to you, and you're going to say, oh, Aim, come on, you're being sort of mamsy-pamsy, you're equivocating. Guys, I went to law school. You are going to get a law school answer. The answer is, it depends on what you would have to trade to get him. Right. Is it worth considering? First of all, we don't know if the 49ers would do it. We don't know if the Raiders are interested. But let's just stipulate, Your Honor, for the moment, that the 49ers would be open to that and the Raiders would be open to that. It all comes down to compensation. What do they want? Is he better than what you have on the roster? Absolutely, positively, yes. What are you willing to give up to get him? I don't know how much they would be willing to do. So do I think that you're a nut? No, I do not think that. Do I think that Perloff should always think you're incredibly intelligent? Yes, I do. Do I think it's hilarious that you asked me about Brock Purdy? Yes, I do. Do I think it's an intriguing idea? Sure, if the 49ers are interested in doing it and you're willing to give something up, it would be an absolute improvement to your roster.
No, Amy, I was with you on all that Brock Purdy stuff, by the way. You had a supporter in me.
Well, it's good to know. I will tell you that I had a speaking engagement recently, and I was speaking, and everybody was good-natured and very fun about the whole Brock Purdy thing, and afterwards a relative of his came up to me and gave me a big hug and said, we didn't think you that people should be so mean to you, because after you said what you said, you did offer to take him out to ice cream.
I'm telling you, Amy, there is a Purdy army. You say anything negative, I don't know where they are now. They all left. They fled the bandwagon, I think. But there was a Purdy army that was very vocal online.
No kidding.
Yep.
No kidding.
Amy, I was just, I'm the fiscal realist of this group of Maggie and Perloff.
Sure.
I am about the bottom line. And Maggie, and I'm sorry to say you in this case, you got to pay Brock Purdy. Like, you're going to give Mark Davis his money. You're going to use all your salary cap with no talent around Brock Purdy. You can't do that.
Well, I mean, look, all teasing aside, you're absolutely right. It's trade-offs. And the question, look, I'll say it again. The question I always ask in these instances is, and do what?
Right.
Whenever we had a quarterback or a coach that fans would say to me, you got to get rid of him, I would say, and do what?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And do what? If you can't answer that question with an answer that is at least as good, if not better, than the status quo, then what are you doing?
Well, Amy, and last one from me, I think that's maybe what Jerry Jones is going through right now. Not to flip from the Raiders to the Cowboys, but you fire Mike McCarthy and do what? Who are you going to bring in? But, Amy, I'm curious from your point of view as the former CEO of the Raiders. So Jerry blocked Mike McCarthy from interviewing with the Bears. Does that mean he's necessarily giving Mike McCarthy a new contract? It seems kind of vindictive, sort of mean, to block a guy and then show him the door.
Well, you know, you've been so kind about mentioning what the football, and the reason I bring that up is you and I are of absolute like mind. Maggie, I expressed almost this exact sentiment yesterday on what the football with Susie Schuster. Several fold. Number one, the former NFL executive in me, the lawyer in me says, okay, you know what? Jerry negotiated a contract which gives the Cowboys exclusivity until the 14th. You negotiated that. In theory, you baked that into the compensation. You have every right to protect that exclusivity for the next week, roughly a week, a little less than a week. But if you've already made up your mind that you're moving on, you know what? Do the right thing and let him talk to other teams before other openings dry up. I think you're exactly right, Maggie. Mm-hmm. See, again, Andrew, we're talking about Maggie being very, 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 very smart. I think you're absolutely right, Maggie. I think they're engaging in the and-do-what analysis. Look, do we want to keep him? Don't we want to keep him? If we don't keep him, what are we going to do? Is the answer any better? You know, if you've already made up your mind you're not keeping someone, then free that person up to talk to other people. Putting the contract aside, it's the right thing to do.
I'm feeling like I'm like the second favorite child in this conversation.
Yeah, you're the third wheel.
I mean, I feel like Maggie could throw out anything right now.
I love you too.
Because I've never gotten anything but love from you, Amy, my entire career.
I love you.
And now being next to Maggie, which I understand, but she is your. It was just Brock Purdy. Everything else she said today was brilliant.
Yeah.
Well, I love you both. And as everyone knows, not in a weird or creepy way, but Andrew, I love you too.
I love you as well.
That's awesome. Amy, you're the best. Thanks for doing this. We appreciate it. We come to you for everything front office and business of football because you know the business inside and out. Thank you.
Honest to goodness, always my pleasure and honor to do so.
Thank you. Amy Trask, the one and only What the Football with Susie Schuster, Tops on CBS Sports Network. And honestly, her book, You Negotiate Like a Girl, is a fantastic book. She did a great job.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's so funny because we could speculate about the Raiders all day. You know, she has like her pulse, her finger on the pulse of what's really going on.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Like, these are some huge challenges ahead. Like, they have big, big decisions coming.
I mean, the Jim Gray, Tom Brady, Sanders family triangle, or I guess Mark Davis kind of makes it a rectangle. But
well, I heard Richard Seymour on a podcast with Schefter a couple weeks ago. Oh, I would listen to that guy. He still stayed up on the game big time. Maybe he has a say as well.
These are two, I know Richard obviously went on to play other places, and so did Tom, but these are two New England guys, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, well, Seymour, I guess, made a big impact because he was a Raider as well.
It was a shocking day when he got traded.
I just worry, like, even if these are good voices, when you have eight voices in your head, because you also have Tom Telesco, the GM, I think that's a lot. And you got, I don't know if your teenage sons are playing Madden and making any revelations.
I think that's just Woody Johnson. 855-212-4227. Okay, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll get the latest headlines with Andrew Bogish and more of your calls. Our great debate today, the greatest NFL wildcard game of all time. We did not ask Amy about that. Maggie and Perloff.
It's a miracle!
Our thanks again to Amy Trask, former CEO of the Raiders, who joined us to talk about what lies ahead of them, and some interesting stuff there from Amy, as always. But, you know, we're talking about Tom Brady being so involved in the coaching search. She said, don't sleep on Richard Seymour, also very involved, and somebody whose opinion is going to be taken into account.
Yeah, I mean, he was a baller, too. I just don't get this. Like, this is not, I'm not hearing solutions that are going to work. I'm hearing classic mistakes of too many voices in Mark Davis's ear. I don't buy that a former great player can be a great GM out of nowhere. And he's not even the GM. He's an owner. And we're ignoring the fact, and you're ignoring the fact, that the guy's still in the television booth and is going to be there till at least February 9th. Like, he's going to draft a quarterback. He's going to find a coach. Like, I don't know. I feel like Tom Brady's spread kind of thin and then totally unproven. It feels like a pipe dream. This is all going to come together and work.
I think he's got a short list. The big question is Vrabel. You know, it seems like such a no-brainer that Vrabel would go to the Patriots, former player there, not a Belichick assistant technically, even though he played for Belichick. So maybe he breaks this cycle.
But you have pretty much like five offers sitting there for Vrabel. Why would you want the Patriots, except for them being your former team?
Well, that's it. He's in the Ring of Honor. I think some ways that could be a negative, though, sometimes. You have such a great reputation. People love you. You come to the team and you fail as a former player. Now, like, look at Gerard Mayo. I don't know if anyone's holding this against him, but, you know, do you risk damaging your reputation with the team if it doesn't work out?
Yeah, definitely.
That's not a reason not to take it, but...
I mean, here's the thing. You have a great quarterback and a crappy roster. So, that's a dicey spot. Like, to see that team turning around fast, I love Drake May, but... there's a lot of damage to undo from Bill Belichick's draft record in the last 5 years.
Yeah, I don't know. Their defense has guys on it, and you need some upgrades on offense. That's for sure.
I'm looking at the defensive players. I'm like, who are these guys? I mean, yeah, they don't have any guys. They have Christian Gonzalez. Then you can just basically throw out the rest of the roster.
Andrew Bogish is here with headlines for us. It's Wednesday. What's going on?
Guys, this Raiders decision leaves us with six head coaching vacancies around the NFL. The Patriots met yesterday with Byron Leftwich and Pep Hamilton. Mike Vrabel gets his sit down tomorrow. The Bears list of potential interviews apparently includes Pete Carroll, but the Cowboys have reportedly denied the request from Chicago to interview Mike McCarthy. The Jets are meeting today with Chiefs offensive coordinator Matt Nagy. Dan Campbell said yesterday that they expect David Montgomery back next weekend for their playoff opener. The running back sprained an MCL back in week 15. For the first time since early November, Zion played last night, 22 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 steals, but his Pelicans took a 104-97 home loss from the T-Wolves. Head coach Willie Green on having Zion in the mix for now.
It was great to see him on the floor. A little bit of rust, which is to be expected, but he was tremendous. His gravity allows guys to get open shots, and he'll continue to get better from here.
Zion missed 27 games with a left hamstring strain. His next absence is TBD.
Sorry, there's like a gravity thing with his.
I know, weight. I left that one alone.
Listen, I mean, Willie Green said it, not me.
They're, by the way, in the mix for the number one pick. You had Cooper Flagg. Zion Williamson, we got something.
A lot of average dunks.
Mm-hmm. According to Perloff.
Yeah. Trae Young hit from half court at the buzzer for a 124-121 Hawks win in Utah. The Mavs beat the Lakers 118-97, still without Luka and Kyrie. The Nuggets didn't have a sick Nikola Jokic, so they lost at home to the Celtics 118-106. And the Suns lost in Charlotte 115-104, allowing those Hornets to end their 10-game skid. Bradley Beal, 10 points, 5 assists in his second game since being demoted to the Phoenix bench. His agent said yesterday there have been no trade talks with anybody. Phoenix has not asked Beal about waiving his no-trade clause.
Wait, so you're saying it's hard to trade a over-the-hill player who's making $55 million a year for the next 3 years? That's hard?
Awesome concept. Can we just, like, people, I've been saying all along, good numbers on a bad team are very confusing in the NBA. If you score 28 points a game in Washington, do not pay that guy $100 million a year, whatever he makes.
Sorry, Jordan Poole.
I feel like I called him the world be free of this generation, and I have not been more right about a basketball take ever.
That's a very old school take. I think most people, I barely know what you're talking about.
Manny's got no shot.
Yeah.
UCLA head coach Mick Cronin thinks of his Bruins what Pearl thinks of that Cooper flag dunk.
It's really hard to coach people that are delusional. The hungry dog gets the bone. We got guys that think they're way better than they are. They're nice kids. They're completely delusional about who they are.
Cronin said that last night after his 22nd-ranked team lost at home to number 24 Michigan, 94-75.
I'd love to know why they're delusional. Is it because Mick Cronin maybe came into their living room once upon a time and said, I can turn you into an NBA player? Maybe the coach said that. He may have said that.
Yeah. He also said last night that he has more energy than everybody, including his assistants, and he doesn't need to try because he almost has 500 wins at 52 years old, but he's trying and nobody else is.
Man, right out of the John Wooden playbook right there. I'm like, this couldn't be further from Wooden.
This is the start of conference play as well. Crashed out after that rivalry between UCLA and Michigan, man. It goes back years.
I'm just blaming the weather. They went to Michigan. It got real cold, and then
were they playing outside?
I don't know. But
no, this game was in L.A. That's why he's so upset. Oh, they had weather on their side.
It's even worse.
I love you're talking about the weather advantage in an indoor basketball game. How could I have not thought of that?
Well, that's basically why I blame that Miami loss. They just stepped off the bus against Syracuse at the end of the season, and even though they went into a dome, they still didn't show up.
Do you know who was going to play at UCLA but never ended up playing there, I don't think?
LiAngelo Ball.
LiAngelo Ball.
The rapper of our generation.
That was a cue for you to play the song we all love so much.
I'm surprised you could even find 15 seconds of that didn't have a curse word in it.
Took a lot of research.
But I was double checking. Like, did he ever play a game at UCLA? I was trying to.
No, he did because they were in. Weren't they on a trip to China when he stole the sunglasses?
I think that was preseason, though.
Oh.
I'm not sure.
Well, I don't think he ever played there.
Also, was it China? I don't remember.
Actually. I think you're right. No,
it was definitely in China that they got arrested. But no, he did not play, I believe, at UCLA.
Yeah, because I was just looking at his stats, and the first one is from a country I've never even heard of. So.
Lithuania?
I just can't. I'm trying to. I would never steal something, obviously, so I'm not. I can't really imagine this, but I can't imagine the level of anxiety attack I would have if I was ever arrested in China.
No, that was a bad scene.
I'd be a puddle.
Of the many things that happened to the Ball family, that was not a high point.
I can't imagine being arrested in this country, let alone a foreign country. No way.
The names of these teams that LiAngelo Ball played for, he played for Pre-Nye in Lithuania. Hey, the Los Angeles Ballers, I assume has something to do with Big Baller Brand. He then played for the Greensboro Swarm. I believe that's the G League team Hornets. Yeah. And then the Astros
de Jalisco, baby. That's the Mexican League. Don't disrespect the Mexican League. Yes, LiAngelo Ball. Here's the thing about LiAngelo Ball in the Mexican League with the Astros de Jalisco. He played about 2 or 3 games, and then he hurt his foot or something like that, and then left Mexico.
And now he's rapping.
Can I say one thing?
The Los Angeles, working in the corner.
The Los Angeles Ballers, not only was the team founded by his father, the whole league was founded by his father.
Wait, Manny, who runs the Jalisco? Is it Eduardo Nahara? Is that too much on the nose?
I have no idea who runs that team. I follow them on Instagram, though.
Sorry, one more thing. Los Angeles Ballers beat the Seattle Ballers in the final.
They're all named the Ballers?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Was it Ball, like, all capitals, B-A-L-L, and then E-R-S?
Not according to Wikipedia.
I think it's Ballers with a Z.
This Bryan thing doesn't work out. We know what LeBron's going to do. He's taking this blueprint.
Start a league.
The Los Angeles Bronze, starring Bronny James.
The J League.
It kind of reminds me. It reminds me of like when George Foreman named all of his kids George. You name all the teams in the league the Ballers.
There's going to be an amazing documentary on the ball. Like the next generation who wasn't there for it would be like, this never happened.
A great debate. Was this a figment of our imagination?
Yes. It's a little bit like that made up high school that got killed and everything.
Bishop Sycamore?
Yeah. On steroids.
BS high.
That'd be a good, great debate. Who's the best ball?
Oof, that's a tough one. I mean, LeVar never lost.
So. Or who are the best ballers of the ball league?
I mean, what's wrong? LeVar would have taken MJ to the hole and taken him out.
That's right.
Yeah, according to him. His word against nobody. Thank you, DJ Stewart, Manny Rodriguez. Thank you to Andrew Bogish, Andrew Kaplan, to Josh Pate, who joined us, to Amy Trask, who joined us, the Weedos and the coffee drinkers, the callers. Y'all are awesome. We got college football playoff game tomorrow. Join us for a big breakdown then. See you.